Thank you all. Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we have the 11 episodes. We are also continuing to work on them as they come out. So number 4 is almost done, but will be done next Friday. So we're still continuing.
And they do come out every Friday morning, you said?
Every Friday, yes. Hopefully we will continue to, you know, we reserve the right to skip a week and catch up. But yeah, that's our goal, is every Friday.
Well, thank you so much, Erin. Just give that one last link for how people can listen to the podcast.
It Did Happen Here podcast.com is the best place. And then we also have the Instagram and the Twitter, so you can follow along on there. And yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for being with us, Erin.
Yeah, this was wonderful. Yay. I'm excited to hear the rest of the series.
Cool. Yeah, me too.
Well, you take care, and thank you for all the work that you do organizing and broadcasting and all of that. We have just about a couple of seconds left. I want to say thank you to everyone, Althea, Sonia. This has been The Gap here on KBOO Portland. I'm Tammy. Althea, thank you again. Have a fantastic Friday, Althea and Sonia.
Bye, y'all. Yeah, thank you so much.
Take care.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Hey, KBOO listeners. It's another big give day for Willamette Week's Give Guide. Just for today, Give Guide has a Black Pack Black Friday offer. When you donate $10 or more, you'll get a chance to win a handmade, made in Portland backpack from Black Pack. If you're 35 or under, you'll also get a chance to win a Zero Wallet and an Anything Organizer, both from Black Pack. Donate to KBOO on Give Guide today to support your favorite community radio station and get a chance to win the Black Pack Black Friday offer. Just go to kboo.fm/give. And don't forget, all new and increasing donations will be matched one-to-one up to $25,000, thanks to an anonymous donor. So show your support today and give back this Black Friday. That's kboo.fm/give. For more information about this Give Guide offer and to donate to KBOO on Give Guide, just go to kboo.fm/give.
Ahlan wa sahlan, and welcome to Arab Voices on Houston's Pacifica Radio, listener-sponsored, commercial-free KPFT 90.1 FM, with live streaming, podcasting, and online archive of previous shows at both kpft.org and arabvoices.net. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. This show is syndicated, and it airs on other radio stations in different states in the U.S. Today on Arab Voices, we will have two segments. First, we will speak with two members of the organizing committee of the upcoming Palestine Rights Literature Festival, scheduled to be held December 2nd through the 6th. We will be speaking about that online global festival with Aya Al-Fahmawi and Ahmed Mansour. During the second segment, we will interview Richard Silverstein, a freelance journalist who writes the Tikkun Olam blog. We will speak with him about President-elect Joe Biden's selection of Tony Blinken as his Secretary of State and what that means for the U.S. foreign policy under Biden-Harris. We will also talk about the current Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's recent visit to the illegal Israeli colonies in the occupied West Bank and the occupied Syrian Golan Heights, and Pompeo's announcement that the U.S. would label products made in the Israeli colonies as made in Israel, as well as the U.S. designation of three of the world's leading human rights groups and the Boycott Divestment Sanctions Movement, BDS, for Palestinian rights as anti-Semitic. Stay tuned for both interviews.
Hi, my name is Ahmed.
Welcome to
Palestine Rights.
Palestine Rights will be the first major festival dedicated to the celebration of our Palestinian culture worldwide.
مهرجان الأدب الفلسطيني رح يكون أول وأكبر مهرجان من نوعه لتغطية وتمثيل الثقافة الفلسطينية.
The common thread uniting all participants is the sense of justice for Palestine. Our festival honors many historic personalities that walked this path before us and many living voices celebrating the Palestinian life, devoted to the belief that art challenges repression and creates bonds between Palestine and the rest of the world.
مهرجان الأدب الفلسطيني رح يبرز مدى غزارة وقوة الثقافة الفلسطينية.
What to expect? Art exhibit.
شعر.
Children tent.
موسيقى.
Readings. Cooking demonstrations. And much more. Palestine Rights will reach international audiences that may not have the opportunity to experience this work due to linguistic barriers, restrictions on movement of Palestinians, and the censorship of Palestinian speech.
سجل واحجز تذكرتك المجانية. حضورك معناته إنه فلسطين لسه قلبها عم بينبض.
Palestine Rights will be held virtually from December 2nd through December 6th. Get your ticket now. Let's celebrate our beloved Palestine together at Palestine Rights.
Joining us via phone are two members of the organizing committee of the upcoming Palestine Rights Literature Festival, and that's Rights with a W. Aya El-Fahmawi, she's a Palestinian-American poet and performance artist originally from Tul Karim and Kufr el-Labad in occupied Palestine. She was the 2018 second place recipient of the Ghassan Kanafani Resistance Arts Scholarship, and her work appears in the anthology titled We Feel a Country in Our Bones. Her work explores diasporic identity and the importance of storytelling and resistance. We are also joined by Ahmed Mansour. Ahmed was born and raised in the Gaza Strip in occupied Palestine. He is a documentary filmmaker. His debut film, Brooklyn Inshallah, a feature documentary on the first Palestinian to ever run for the New York City Council, was released in 2019 and premiered at prestigious film festivals. Ahmed was named the 2019 Mountain Film Emerging Filmmaker Fellow. He has spoken to audiences at Duke University, Columbia University, and the Washington Center for Narrative Studies about his journey with filmmaking as a result of the 2014 Israeli attack on Gaza. Aya and Ahmed, welcome to Arab Voices.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
It's great to have you both on the show. Thank you so much. So we want to talk about Palestine Rights Literature Festival. Tell us more about this, and is this the first time such an event, it's an online event, being held about Palestine rights?
Yep, so the event was originally planned and set to begin in May of 2020 in New York, and it was going to be the first and the largest of its kind in North America, inviting writers from all over the Arab world as well as throughout the diaspora to share their thoughts and their work about Palestine in our culture and our literature. And at its heart, this event is a celebration of our culture and the stories that we have to tell. And so after everything happened with the pandemic, and they responsibly canceled the festival originally, they reimagined it as a virtual festival. And because of that, we have this really wonderful opportunity to connect writers and readers from all over the world in their thinking and in their work about Palestine.
Is this the first time, the first year that it's being done?
Yes, this is the first year.
It's an interesting festival because it has a huge participation. When I was looking at the website, from very well-known Palestinian prominent figures, not just in the U.S., but also from around the globe. So it is really truly going to be a global event, if you will, a global festival. So tell us more about the goal exactly and what is being planned for this Palestine Rights Literature Festival.
I think the goal of this festival, given our status as Palestinians around the world, the fragmented situation we're Palestinians are, you know, distributed all over the world, given our history. The main goal, I think, for this festival, it gives hope that Palestine is one, and it can be as one through our culture. If you have so many Palestinian celebrated writers and poets from Palestine itself and around the world, I think this is a very unique scenario where the Palestinian within the geographic of Palestine and the Palestinian outside, because maybe there are more Palestinians outside than inside. So this is the first time where we are seeing it, you know, all coming together. I think this is a very important point that I see where Palestine rights, you know, proves this point that we are all one, given the fragmented situation that the Palestinian goes through today. So having celebrated people from Palestine, having celebrated figures from the diaspora, I think that it sends a clear message that we are one, and yes, it can be done, and it can be even translated into a bigger mission than a festival celebrates the culture, because the culture is political. And I think the agenda of this festival is to prove that we are one, and it can lead into a Palestinian unity in moving forward with what the Palestinian cause is going through.
Definitely, with such a rich culture, Palestinian culture and heritage and stories to tell, you can always find those gigantic figures in the Palestinian community throughout the world, like you said, inside Palestine and outside, to participate and to show that rich culture and heritage through their stories and poetry and so on. Could you share with us some of those who are going to be participating in this event, Aya?
Absolutely. So we have some giants of Palestinian literature, such as Ibrahim Nasrallah, who was a world-renowned poet and artist. So I'll start by mentioning some of the poets, because that's what I'm the most familiar with. But we also have from the diaspora, Remy Kanazi, who is notable both in his work in literature, but also in his activism. In addition, we have some of the award-winning novelists, both on our board and our organizing committee, as well as participating in the festival. So some of my favorites include Suzanne Abulhawa herself, who conceptualized this festival, and who recently released the book Against the Loveless World, which is numerously nominated, and I just finished it. It's incredible. As well as Hela Elian, Zadi Judah, and many
who's
others.
Who's a Houstonian, by the
so
way.
These are,
Judah is from Houston.
Yes. It's really an incredible poet as well. So I'm very excited to have him in the poetry performance portion of the festival. And then on top of that, we have filmmakers, and we have people who do crafts. And so it's really to encapsulate and art as well, and museum curators. So it's really to encapsulate the full culture of Palestinians. I'm sure Ahmed can also mention some of the people within his field as well.
Of course. I mean, as I mentioned, like the vast, diverse Palestinian artists, big names, and as a filmmaker, you know, one of my favorite filmmakers, Mai Masri, she's having a panel in the festival, which is, again, it shows the diverse artistry or artistic scene that the Palestinian person got to be experienced at. And I want to also mention one amazing person that is participating in the festival, which is, of course, Khaled Jarrar. And as we know, Khaled Jarrar now is in the prison. And because she's in the prison, the festival didn't give up to include her. So Khalid Jarrar managed to smuggle a letter with her daughters, Soha and Yafa, and actually the festival is going to open with Soha and Yafa reading the letter that Khalida wrote from her prison. And I think this is a very important aspect about the festival. It reaches to the people who are on the front line, who are paying their life for us to be proud Palestinians around the world. And Khalida Jarrar is a political prisoner. All of her guilt is she's calling for free Palestine. And having her voice and words to open the festival is a clear message again and again and again and again that we Palestinians are one, and the prisoner is the same as the writer, as the same as the filmmaker, as the same as the stone thrower. We are all one fighting for a just cause, which is the Palestinian cause. And what's better than celebrating that through the rich history and culture that the that Palestine can offer the rest of the world and shed a light on what I think very dark world nowadays.
Absolutely. And I know
that's so beautifully.
Yeah, go ahead, Aya.
I'm sorry, I would love to add. So that's so beautifully said, Ahmed. And I also would like to really emphasize actually our keynote panel that we're having. And the keynote panel also emphasized not only are the Palestinians, are we one, but we are one in our struggle with other oppressed people throughout the world. And so our keynote panel actually has Angela Davis, who is an incredible abolitionist and activist and scholar and writer, as well as Jeremy Corbyn of the Labour Party and Hanan Ashrawi, who are all going to come together and actually discuss the importance of culture, internationalism, and solidarity. Because not only are we as Palestinians one across the world, but we are also in this fight with other people who are also fighting for their liberation, for their freedom, and for their ability to self-identify and to be treated with dignity. And so we're one with all of the political prisoners of the world.
That is very important, especially nowadays where the U.S. is trying hard to make it to criminalize people who speak for BDS and people who speak against Israeli atrocities and so on. So to have this international participation, and I think I saw lots of names on the website of dozens of international scholars and writers and artists that are also taking a part in this, right?
Absolutely. Another featured scholar who we'll have is Mark Lamont Hill, who was actually recently criticized and lost his job on CNN for speaking out about the Palestinian cause, who is also a scholar of his own right. We have so many fantastic thinkers.
I'm sure it's taking tons of efforts to organize such a festival where you have over 100 participants in it. It's going to be over several days. It's fully online. Tell us more about the logistics of it. And I know there are so many organizations behind it, sponsoring it. Tell us more about the time frame and the dates this is going to take place. And how do people participate? How can they attend this online global festival? Ahmed, you want to tell us about that? Ahmed, can you hear us? Or Aya, can you take that?
I can take that for now. Have we lost Ahmed?
Ahmed, can you hear us? We may have lost him.
Okay. Well, I can take that. So the really wonderful thing about Palestine Rights moving to a digital platform and our real commitment to making sure that this knowledge is accessible to people is that it's free to register. So Palestine Rights is basically on a pay-as-you-go platform of what you would like to donate is what you're able to donate in order to register. And so there's been so much thought put into making sure that the time zones are going to be okay with the particular panels that are at play. So it's this new world of only digital media where we are sending emails and creating Zooms and constantly connecting with one another. And we're so lucky to have this organizing committee and these wonderful members of our community, because all of these speakers have also been very generous with their time as well, and their passion for Palestine rights, that they've been really, really wonderful throughout this process. But our organizing committee has people who are working on media, and Ahmed has made really wonderful promotion videos for Palestine rights himself that he's edited and produced. And we have actually a lot of our graphics were made by people in Gaza. So we're looking to employ Palestinians in Palestine too. However we can connect young people and people throughout the world with this festival and this goal, we're looking to do that.
That sounds good. This begins on Wednesday, December 2nd?
2nd, until December 6th.
So that's 4 days full of different activities, programs. Can you tell us a little bit about those programs and what people might expect and see there?
Sure. So we have multiple different rooms at the Palestine Rights Festival. So it's this really incredible platform. When you log on, it's meant to look like a conference. So there'll be different rooms that you can click into and different interactive experiences that you can have. So we have an interactive art gallery that you can click into and walk through and see the beautiful art of different Palestinians throughout the world. And then we'll have our actual panels happening in particular rooms. And so if you're interested in seeing a poetry performance, which is one of the first ones, and I'm very grateful to have the opportunity to curate for you all, you'll experience what is really a performance. And then maybe we'll have a panel afterwards. But at the same time, we'll also have a coffee and books option where we are interviewing these really renowned novelists and poets who've published books, and they talk about their experience writing. But we'll also have a children's tent for children to do activities during the festival. And so some people that we have featured in our children's chest are the Crafty Arab. And she'll do these wonderful crafts with the kids where they make, tell their own stories or make their own art pieces and papers and things like that. So there's really something for everyone at this festival, and that's something I'd love to emphasize.
And I know you're going to have music and vendors also and cooking demonstrations and a lot of stuff there.
Thank you so much. Thank you for catching that. Yeah, we'll also have a concert at the end. Right, we'll have vendors, we're going to have comedy cooking shows as well as a regular cooking demonstration. Yeah, it's going to be really great.
And I believe you all have also a special offer for teachers and university faculty and students to attend these discussions, especially in writings during the festival?
Yep, so we've reached out to different universities and different schools for that purpose as well.
This is fantastic. So how do people get more information about this upcoming Palestine Rights Literature Festival to see all these details we're talking about and if they are interested to register to attend it?
Mm-hmm. So you can visit VFairs, palestinerights.vfairs.com. That's the platform we'll be hosting it on. And so if you just Google Palestine Rights VFair, it'll be the first thing to come up. And there's a green button on the landing page that says register. And so you'll just fill in some of your information about where you are in the world and a donation if you'd like to contribute one. And you'll be all set to be registered for the Palestine Rights Literature Festival. And we'll be working on sending people reminders of when these panels are happening so you can really stay in touch with it throughout the whole time. And you can attend as many panels as you're interested in attending. And there'll actually be also meeting rooms at the festival for you to communicate with other attendees and then other audience members, and even the speakers. So even though we are digital, yeah, we want people to be able to talk to one another and build community.
So it's a great networking opportunity also. I don't know, Ahmed is still, he's still on the line here, but for somehow we can't hear him at all. But this is going to be really a great festival, what seems to be like Palestine Rights Literature Festival, a worldwide virtual festival dedicated to the celebration and support of Palestinian literature. Well, I want to thank you so much, Aya El-Fahmawi and Ahmed Mansour, two members of the organizing committee for the upcoming Palestine Rights Literature Festival, for joining us. And I am looking forward to attending the festival virtually myself. So I greatly, greatly appreciate your time this evening.
Thank you so much for having us. We're looking forward to meeting you there.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Arab Voices on KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Joining us via phone from Seattle, Washington, is Richard Silverstein. He is a freelance journalist. He writes the Tikkun Olam blog, devoted to exposing the excesses of the Israeli national security state. His work has appeared in Haaretz, The Middle East Eye, The Nation, The New Arab, The Guardian, The Los Angeles Times, The Forward, and The Seattle Times. He contributed to the essay collection devoted to the 2006 Lebanon War, A Time to Speak Out, and has another essay in the collection, Israel and Palestine, Alternate Perspectives on Statehood. Richard, welcome to Arab Voices.
Thank you. Good to be with you, Saeed.
It's good to have you on the show. Appreciate your time. Before we talk about the next president of the United States, Joe Biden, and his nominee for Secretary of State, Tony Blinken, and what is expected from their foreign policy, let's talk about the current U.S. administration and some of the recent measures announced by the current Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo. So, and as you know, and you've heard, Mike Pompeo went on a trip to Israel recently, visited an illegal Israeli colony built on Palestinian land in the occupied West Bank, and also visited the occupied Syrian Golan Heights, the first time a top U.S. official visits those occupied areas. During his visit, he announced that the U.S. would label products made in the illegal Israeli colonies made in Israel. And he also announced that the U.S. will designate three prominent human rights groups, specifically Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, and Oxfam, as anti-Semitic because of their criticism of Israel's violations of international law. Your reaction, Richard, to Pompeo's visit to an Israeli colony on occupied Palestinian land in the West Bank and the occupied Syrian Golan Heights?
Well, this continues the four disastrous years of Trump foreign policy in the Middle East, specifically in Israel, Palestine. So it's kind of the pinnacle of the ridiculousness of those 4 years. And with Pompeo declaring that these three major international human rights organizations are quote unquote anti-Semitic, it's just the height of preposterousness. And we should tell your listeners that these groups we can talk about BDS on a separate time, but these groups actually don't support BDS. They do. The Amnesty, I know for sure, has said that they support a boycott of Israeli settlements and everything produced in the Israeli settlements. But regardless of whether they support BDS or not, BDS is not a movement which has anything to do with or any perspective on anti-Semitism. It's not anti-Semitic. It's a nonviolent movement that is dedicated to preserving and attaining Palestinian rights, and it has nothing to do with or say about Jews per se, and that really is the definition of anti-Semitism, which is hatred of Jews. And so that's just a non-starter in terms of Pompeo. I note that while he was at this West Bank winery that you mentioned his visit, they dedicated a vintage to him called Pompeo. And so what the U.S. is doing is it's destroying a consensus established over 40 or 50 years of U.S. foreign policy related to Israel, in which we refused to recognize the conquest of the West Bank and Gaza, and refused to recognize the annexation of the Golan and East Jerusalem, and we opposed settlements, and it turned everything on its head and made a total mess of our policy and banned the Palestinians and created this basically bear hug embrace of Israel and every violation of law that it engaged in.
Absolutely, and you mentioned it, the disastrous 4 years for the Trump administration, no doubt about that, because Trump has taken so many measures over the past 4 years, unprecedented, have never been done before, in fully, completely supporting Israel, endorsing everything that it does, which is against international law, in violation of human rights, and moving the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, and recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, which is occupied territory still, and no resolution has been faced there. So the Trump administration seems to be also racing towards providing Israel with a whole lot more before Biden takes the helm of the office, although we're not sure if that will change. Anyway, we'll talk about that a little bit later during this interview. Labeling the products that are made in Israeli colonies made in Israel. A lot of people are concerned about that because those are illegal colonies. Those are not... This is an occupied land, is Palestinian land, and for the U.S. to say, if you make products here, it's okay, label them as made in Israel. Complete free blanket to Israel, occupy whatever you want, and it's all yours, it's all Israel, not occupied territories.
Well, what's going to happen here is that if this goes through and all products that are made in occupied territories are considered made in Israel and labeled that way in the U.S. when they're sold here, it really strengthens the BDS movement, because now what you can say is that, well, if the products of the settlements are made in Israel, then let's boycott everything. Let's boycott the settlements. Let's boycott Israel itself. It really just strengthens the BDS movement. And it's the opposite of what they want to achieve, which is they want to try to normalize occupation and normalize apartheid and make it appear like, you know, what's done on the West Bank by Israel is just a normal kind of, you know, thing. And they will annex the West Bank eventually to Israel if they can get away with it. So this is a really damaging blow to Israel, and they unfortunately don't recognize the impact it will have.
Yeah, and just a reminder to our listeners, when we talk about the occupied West Bank, occupied East Jerusalem, and occupied Gaza Strip, we're talking about 22% only of historic Palestine. And that 22%, a huge portion, is where Israel has its illegal colonies on those Palestinian lands. So even the 22% remaining of historic Palestine, most of it is occupied and have been taken over by force by the Israeli occupation. And now the United States wants to make those illegal colonies as part of Israel permanently. It's okay, no matter what. And that's, according to Trump, the new peace deal or peace plan that he has introduced or is working on for the sake of Israel, not really a peace between Israel and anybody else.
Right, and what we have to remember also is that what was offered to the Palestinians in return for acquiescing to this deal was they were promised $50 billion by Jared Kushner, and the $50 billion wasn't even going to come from America. It was going to come from countries like Qatar and in the Gulf. So in return for money, they wanted the Palestinians to give up their rights and their political rights and any sovereignty. So it was just a shameful betrayal of the Palestinians, but it's really what we've come to expect from Trump, unfortunately.
And somehow they managed to get some Arab countries now to endorse Israel for whatever it does, United Arab Emirates and Bahrain to start with, and I am sure other Arab countries will follow suit and endorse Israel and normalize relations regardless and despite all the atrocities and war crimes that Israel has been and continues to do in the occupied Palestinian territories against Palestinians. So going back to the human rights organizations we started talking about with the U.S. Designation of the three world's leading human rights groups, Human Rights Watch, as we said, Amnesty International, and Oxfam, as anti-Semitic. because of their criticism, not of Jews, of Israel's violations of international law, and also planning to label BDS, as you mentioned, the Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions movement that started actually in 2005 for Palestinian rights as anti-Semitic and restrict fundings for groups that support it. This is interesting because, you know, to label anybody, BDS or any group, as anti-Semitic isn't the definition that basically you're saying those groups are speaking against Jews?
Right. Right.
So how could be speaking against Israel be speaking against Jews? There are a lot of Jews. You are a Jew yourself, and you speak against Israel and what it does against the Palestinians.
Right. Well, this is a complete misunderstanding of what the term anti-Semitism means, as I mentioned earlier. And it's a conflation of Israel with Jews, which is what anti-Semites do all the time. If you look at what white supremacists like David Duke say, they confuse, deliberately confuse Israel with Jews, and they make no distinction between them. And it's very important that we understand that Israel is a country, it is a nation, it is not a religion. And therefore, criticizing Israel cannot be at all anti-Semitic. And they're trying to label Jews as anti-Semites, which is a complete, it's a logical fallacy. And I want to add also that Pompeo said, in addition to calling these three groups anti-Semitic and BDS anti-Semitic, he said BDS was a quote-unquote cancer. This goes along with Israel's attempt to criminalize human rights by refusing to allow the representatives of these three groups to live in Israel and do work in Israel for human rights. So we have Israel on the one hand criminalizing the human rights in these groups, and we have the United States working hand in hand with Israel by doing this on the international stage. So it's really an unholy alliance between these two parties to destroy decades of respected work by international human rights organizations, and it really tries to destroy the whole global international perspective. The International Criminal Court, the United States threatened to put sanctions on the chief prosecutor of it, and Israel has joined in that kind of denunciation as well. So we need a relief from these 4 years and from Trump. And, we can get into talking about Biden, but there are some areas in which I think he can give us relief, but I think there's certain limits to what we can expect from that as well.
Absolutely. And, by the way, Amnesty International issued a statement regarding the U.S. Designation of it as anti-Semitic, and it's a long statement, but I'll read just a small portion of it. Where it says the Department of State's targeting of groups advocating for using peaceful means such as boycotts to end human rights violations against Palestinians as anti-Semitic violates freedom of expression and is a gift to those who seek to silence, harass, intimidate, and oppress those standing up for human rights around the world. This is simply the latest attack from a U.S. government determined to undermine the universality of human rights and the global fight against racism and discrimination, including anti-Semitism.
That's an admirable statement. And, we have to add to that that what Israel and the United States are doing, in effect, by supporting and by ratifying all of these outrageous violations of international law and this regime of apartheid that Israel has implemented in the West Bank and even on its Israeli-Palestinian citizens, actually that incites anti-Semitism. If you have white supremacists and neo-Nazis around the world, and including this country, who hate Jews and hate Israel, this just gives them more ammunition to do so. And we've seen over the last 4 years, we've seen Muslim Americans targeted, we've seen Jews targeted by these neo-Nazis and killed, and this just gives them further gas to spread on the flames.
And last year, in 2019, I recall, because I aired his remarks on this program, Omar Shakir with Human Rights Watch, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He was expelled from Israel because he was with Human Rights and they were just documenting what is happening there, what is going on there. And Israel expelled him from there and did not permit him to do any work inside the occupied territories or in Israel. And he works for Human Rights Watch.
That's the exact incident that I was talking about, and there was another one in which another human rights organization, its staff was told that they could not renew their visas and they had to leave Israel. So, and you have all sorts of laws that the Knesset is passing that are also criminalizing all of this human rights work. So Israel really is turning into a, what I call a Judeo-fascist state. A state which exploits religion in order to support and ratify its hatred of minorities, its hatred of the Palestinian citizens of Israel and of the Palestinians living in the West Bank and Gaza. And it's causing Israel to be further ostracized. It's strengthening BDS, by the way. BDS is the one of the main grassroots movements, nonviolent movements against what Israel is doing. So when you have this sort of outrageous behavior, it only strengthens what Israel is calling its delegitimizers. What Israel is doing is really delegitimizing itself, but it's trying to blame human rights organizations and claiming that they and BDS delegitimize Israel.
Yeah, and like you said, because of the success of BDS, it has been extremely successful, not just in the United States, but also in Europe and some other countries. Because of its ongoing success, they are fearful of it and its effect, and that's why they are trying to make it illegal. And the United States has been passing laws in different states,
right,
passing laws, including Texas here. And there have been some lawsuits, and those lawsuits were won, just like the one by Bahia Amawi in Texas here against the state for refusing to renew her contract with a state school because she refused to sign that anti-BDS statement. So the next president of the United States, Joe Biden, chose Kamala Harris as his vice president, and this week he chose Tony Blinken as his secretary of state. What is your reaction to Biden's selection of Tony Blinken as the next secretary of state? What do we know about him? And this is in terms of the U.S. foreign policy towards the Middle East. Obviously, if he's secretary of state, he'll be dealing with that a lot, and in particular, Israel and Palestine.
Well, I think that Tony Blinken is going to, the buzzword that everybody is using about Biden and his appointments of cabinet members is continuity. So continuity basically means we're going to go back to the Obama era, we're going to go back to the Clinton era, we're going to dust off all of the people who were in cabinet positions and in federal agencies and bring them back and put them in positions in the Biden administration. So Blinken is someone who has been at Biden's side for since 1994, and he worked with him on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and he came to the Obama administration when Biden became vice president, and he's been at his side all along. Biden, you probably know, his views about Israel are straight from the Israel lobby shop. Biden speaks every time he can to AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, which is basically the Israel lobby in the United States, and he is a captive of the Israel lobby. Biden, he's a gregarious, outgoing, sort of hail fellow, well-met type, and he wants everybody to like him, so he makes the right kind of noises toward Palestinians. Issues, but he favors a two-state solution, but he doesn't favor doing anything serious that would actually bring that about. And when you liberal Zionists like Biden and the Israel lobby do things like this, they make it impossible for there to be a two-state solution, and they drive the eventual outcome towards a one-state solution. The problem is that they demonize the one-state solution, even though it's the only viable option left. And so what one of my goals in what I do is trying to articulate a progressive U.S. Middle East policy that that corrects from all of the errors of the past and avoids the pitfalls of, you know, the two-state solution and saying that if we have a settlement freeze, we're going to be able to solve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and also, try to replace giving real power and real sovereignty and agency to Palestinians by giving them humanitarian aid. So, you know, Biden says he's going to renew the payments by the U.S. Federal aid to the Palestinian Authority, and he's going to renew the payments that we were making to UNRWA, the UN relief organization that aids Palestinians throughout the diaspora and in Palestine, and all of those are things that Obama did, and so there's not really going to be a change. Where he won't change Trump policy is with the embassy in Jerusalem. Trump moved it from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, as you mentioned earlier, and Biden has said explicitly, and Blinken has confirmed, that there will be no move back of the embassy to Tel Aviv. So essentially, you're keeping in place a keystone of Trump policy, recognizing, with the U.S. recognizing Israeli sovereignty over Jerusalem, which is really shameful. Two other things that he might do, Biden might do, that would be somewhat beneficial would be reopening the U.S. consulate in East Jerusalem that deals with Palestinian affairs, and allowing the PA to reopen the consulate that Trump shut down in Washington, D.C. So those, again, are sort of nibbling around the edges of the problem. They're not really plumbing the depths of this and seeking a real resolution, because Biden is not going to be willing to put the feet to the fire of the Israelis. He's not going to be willing to put maximum pressure on them to compromise on any major issue. So the other issue, the problem for Biden, is that he's having to spend so much time undoing the damage of the last 4 years in domestic and foreign policy that an issue that's so intractable as Israel-Palestine, he's just not going to want to devote a lot of attention to that. He's going to be spending a lot of time dealing with China, dealing with Russia, and dealing with Iran. But Israel-Palestine, with Israel sort of digging in its heels and having a history of being able to outfox U.S. administrations, I really strongly doubt, and I hate to be so downbeat about this, but I strongly doubt that Biden is going to invest a lot in that. And that really plays to Israel's interests and to the Israel lobby's interests. They're just as happy if Biden is steering away from the Israel-Palestine issue, because it allows Israel to continue to create these facts on the ground, to continue stealing land, to continue building new settlements, and to continue annexation in everything but name only. So there will be certain positive things that we can expect from Biden, but overall, I think it's going to be 4 years of status quo.
So there was a lot of excitement about Biden winning the presidency from voters, but it's more of really anti-Trump, that we just don't want Trump no matter what, but it's not much for the love of Biden and his agenda. That's how I am seeing it so far, especially in terms of foreign policy. But you mentioned something earlier, Richard, and I'm not sure a lot of people know about this. Was it the DMI that you mentioned, that Democratic Majority for Israel,
mm-hmm.
that hawkish group,
which
is the Democratic Party version of AIPAC? Can
right.
you tell us more about that? Because, you know, then they are right after the Democrats, just like after the Republicans, in terms of how to steer them for Israel and what Israel does.
Democratic Majority for Israel is a creature of AIPAC, even though it doesn't admit that. All of its leadership, its volunteer leaders and its staff come out of the AIPAC shop, either directly out of AIPAC or out of a very AIPAC-oriented outlook on Israel. And they are part of the Israel lobby. They view themselves as the enforcer for Israel affairs in the Democratic Party. They don't want to allow the Democratic Party to stray too far from the talking points of the lobby. They see that there is a progressive wing of the party, namely the members of the Squad and all of the other new progressive members that were elected in November, and that alarms them no end. So they go on the attack against members like Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and they routinely call them anti-Semites. They spent $1 million trying to defeat Bernie Sanders in the Iowa primary, and they failed miserably because Sanders came within a whisker of winning that primary. So they are really bullies and thugs dressed in suits as far as Israel is concerned. And they're really a very noxious and dangerous thing, because AIPAC, everybody knows what AIPAC is. Everybody knows that they are the the most powerful lobby in America, and that they represent the interests of the Israeli government. But the Democratic Majority for Israel is a new organization, and it has the word democratic in it. So people are liable to think that it's just another Democratic Party operation, but it really isn't. The reason why they had to launch this organization is because AIPAC is so far right in its views, and it's really all of its donors and its leaders come out of the Republican Party, even though it calls itself bipartisan. So they had to create this organization that was going to nominally be, you know, democratic in its title, and have people who come out of the Democratic Party, like Ann Lewis and Mark Melman, who's the CEO of this organization. But these are all right wing pro Israel Democrats who come out of the Clinton era, they have the interests of Israel at heart, but they do not have the interests of the Democratic Party at heart, and they do not have the interests of American Jews at heart. And while we're talking about that, we should note that American Jews do not hold the views that the DMI holds. The American Jews voted 70% for Biden. American Jews detest Bibi Netanyahu, and they oppose most of Israel's policies towards the Palestinians, including the occupation. So the other issue you have here is you have a small elite group of communal leaders in the American Jewish community who are, pro-Israel, not just pro-Israel, but pro-Likud, and they are speaking on behalf of the entire American Jewish community. And that's another danger, because people who don't like what these wealthy pro-Israel Jews are saying will think that every Jew believes that, and won't understand that there are groups like Jewish Voice for Peace, and If Not Now, and other groups that actually are very critical of Israel, critical of Zionism, support BDS. And that's another reason why I don't want DMI or AIPAC to suck all the oxygen out of this debate, because American people need to know that there is a really wide spectrum and diverse views about Israel, including being represented among the progressive community and on the left.
Yeah, and there's going to be a lot of work ahead, a lot of hard work, despite the fact that several progressives were elected to some positions in the United States, the Senate, Congress, and so on. And as you mentioned, and earlier, Tony Blinken had said before in statements that, he explained that Biden would not condition U.S. aid to Israel on Israel's adherence to any international law. As a matter of fact, he said, quote, Biden would not tie military assistance to Israel to any political decisions that it makes, period, full stop. He said it, he's committed to it, unquote. So it's again full blind support to the state of Israel, regardless of the atrocities and the war crimes that it commits against the Palestinians. So, and that's from the Biden administration. So there is going to be tons of hard work. What advice would you give to people, in addition to, of course, educating themselves to all these things? And you may want to mention, I know you have an upcoming webinar this Friday on Biden towards a progressive Middle East policy.
Yes. This is really what's going to be difficult about the next 4 years, because we're going to have a Democratic president, we're going to have a Democratic administration, and we're going to have Tony Blinken, who even some of Bernie Sanders' senior staff were saying kind things about Tony Blinken, which really shocked me on Twitter. People are going to be lulled into sleep by thinking, okay, everything is going to be fine now because we have a Democrat in the White House, but that's not true at all. We have to work super hard to maintain the rights that we have. We have to work against these state laws that have been passed that criminalize support for BDS, and we have to work against any legislation that's proposed in Congress, which would do that on a federal level, and there are proposals to do that. We have to continue to be vigilant to make sure that Biden doesn't backslide on some of the things that we believe that he has said that he will support. And, you know, one of the things about what Blinken said, going back to what you just mentioned, was the conditioning of U.S. aid on Israeli behavior was actually a plank that was adopted by Bernie Sanders. And actually, Pete Buttigieg, of all people, supported this proposal as well. So Biden was trying to distinguish himself from Bernie Sanders. And Bernie had the right idea on this. And, you know, we can argue about whether Bernie went far enough and Bernie's liberal Zionist views, but that's another story, really. And we have to be vigilant with Joe Biden, because he is not going to espouse policies that the progressives are going to agree with. And we have to support people like the Squad. I note that Ilhan Omar has a wonderful piece in The Nation that came out this week, in which she presents her vision of a progressive U.S. foreign policy. And the webinar that I'm planning on Friday, which is going to be hosted by a community radio station in Portland, Oregon, is going to have an Iranian-American professor and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution in Doha, and we're going to be talking about how do we articulate a progressive U.S. Middle East policy and how do we bring it about. And those are obviously really big sort of global questions, and we're going to spend some time talking about it. So if your listeners are interested in registering, they can go to my Facebook. I have a Facebook event page, and my blog is called Tikkun Olam, and I have a blog post with a link to registering for that webinar on the website.
And I will have links to both your website and that online webinar scheduled for Friday. I'll have links to both of them on our website, arabvoices.net. Any last thought you would like to share with our listeners, Richard?
Well, I just want to say how pleased I am that you allowed me to come on your show. You probably are aware that voices like mine and progressive voices in general are pretty much shut out of, not just shut out of mainstream media, but we're shut out even of elements of progressive media. So it's very hard to get our voices heard, and it's especially hard, I don't know how it is in the Arab and the Muslim community, but it's especially hard in the Jewish community for people like me to be heard, because we are breaking with the consensus in our community of, you know, sort of blind pro-Israel support of everything up and down the line. So I'm especially grateful for you opening up your airwaves for my point of view.
And we're glad that you're able to join us. Thank you so much, Richard Silverstein, a freelance journalist who authored and he writes the Tikkun Olam blog, and he writes frequently, and I will have a link to that on our website, arabvoices.net. Thank you, Richard, so much. We greatly appreciate your time.
Thanks again, Saeed. Glad to be with you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.
Hi, my name is Ahmed.
Welcome to
Palestine Right.
Palestine Rights will be the first major festival dedicated to the celebration of our Palestinian culture worldwide.
مهرجان الأدب الفلسطيني رح يكون أول وأكبر مهرجان من نوعه لتغطية وتمثيل الثقافة الفلسطينية.
The common thread uniting all participants is the sense of justice for Palestine. Our festival honors many historic personalities that walked this path before us and many living voices celebrating the Palestinian life, devoted to the belief that art challenges repression and creates bonds between Palestine and the rest of the world.
مهرجان الأدب الفلسطيني رح يبرز مدى غزارة وقوة الثقافة الفلسطينية.
What to expect? Art exhibit.
شعر.
Children tent.
موسيقى.
Readings. Cooking demonstrations. And much more. Palestine Rights will reach international audiences that may not have the opportunity to experience this work due to linguistic barriers, restrictions on movement of Palestinians, and the censorship of Palestinian speech.
سجل واحجز تذكرتك المجانية. حضورك معناته إنه فلسطين لسه قلبها عم بينبض.
Palestine Rights will be held virtually from December 2nd through December 6th. Get your ticket now. Let's celebrate our beloved Palestine together at Palestine Rides.
Join KBOO Friday, November 27th at 11 a.m. for an online webinar discussion about President-elect Biden's plans for the Middle East. Our panelists will discuss Israel-Palestine, regional conflict among Iran, Saudi Arabia, and Israel, and the ongoing crisis in Yemen. To register for this event, go to our homepage at kboo.fm or find the event on the KBOO Facebook page. Again, that's our KBOO webinar on Biden's plans for the Middle East on Friday, November 27th at 11 a.m. Find details and the sign-up link online at kboo.fm. For questions and more information, email our public affairs director at publicaffairs@kboo.org.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO has a mobile app. You can listen to all your favorite shows, subscribe to KBOO podcast, even set KBOO as your alarm clock. Just look for KBOO on the iTunes and Google Play Store. And don't forget to leave us a 5-star review.